The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, this is Stephen Hines, author of Zombie Fabulous, Rebirth Defect, and Valedictorian USA. And you, my friends, are getting your skulls crushed by the pile driver of John Orlando with his PBD cast in your face.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 258. I hope you're doing well out there, and I sincerely thank you for listening to this episode. And it's a good one, because I'm joined by a man that has been on the independent wrestling scene for quite a while. Probably a lot of people know him as the manager and tag team partner of Nikolai Volkov. I'm talking about Nikita Breznikov. Now, Nikita is going to share some stories about how he first met Nikolai and teaming with him, both in a managerial and sometimes as a partner as well. And the one thing that I do remark in the episode is that Nikita's tale about how he first met Nikolai and how it was kind of a business arrangement that quickly turned into a deep friendship. And for longtime listeners of the PVD cast, you know a couple of years ago, Matt Sweeney, who was promoting the Wrestle Legends convention here in Columbus, Ohio, was on, and he had a very similar tale about how working with Nikolai quickly led to becoming fast friends with him. So and I'd remark that that is just such an amazing, I don't want to say coincidence, because obviously it's part of who Nikolai Volkov was as a man, but it's a really heartwarming tale. And so we're going to talk about that. Nikita is also going to talk about When It Was Real, which is a book he co-authored with wrestling journalist Scott Teal, talking about the WWWF, specifically the 70s. You know, I just had a blast with Nikita. And in fact, as I comment towards the end of the episode, and it's absolutely true, he's going to have to come back on because I had about, I don't know, 16 other questions to ask him that I didn't even get a chance to do. So I really think it's a great episode, especially if you're an old school wrestling fan like I am. It's just, it's going to be a trip down memory lane for you. So with that being said, I need to take care of one little thing first, and then we'll get to my conversation with Nikita. Just the other day, I stopped by World's Greatest Comics, which of course is the great sponsor of the PVD cast. And I was talking to Jeff, and he said that everything is still going pretty good down there at the shop. They are indeed, as I said before, a great sponsor of the PVD cast. So if you love my podcast, then you should show some love to World's Greatest Comics by stopping by the store if you're in the Central Ohio area. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, to be exact. But if you're listening, you know, outside the Central Ohio area, you can still check out their great, great catalog of comics, back issues, toys, collectibles, posters, basically anything you need for your comic book fandom, they got. And if you are outside the Central Ohio area, as I was saying, check them out online at wgcomics.com or over on Facebook. Just look for at WG Comics. And with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Nikita Breznikov. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me this evening is a man that has had a very interesting career in the world of professional wrestling. I'm sitting down with Nikita Breznikov. Nikita, how are you doing this afternoon?
Beautiful, Tavardish. I'm happy to be talk with you and all the beautiful people out there, hopefully still wrestling fans of the old ways.
You know, we're going to talk quite a bit about the old way and the new way and whatnot. But let's get started maybe with the basic question I asked everyone that is in pro wrestling. How did you get started in this wacky business?
I'm the luckiest son of a bitch on the face of the earth. At the time, I was, believe it or not, I was working for the Baltimore Police Department. I'm a retired detective sergeant that I put 27 years in. And at that time, I was working in the patrol division, and I saw a sign, what would come to be a staple in my life, a poster, an advertisement of a local wrestling show. And it had, it was a Sunday afternoon show, Nikolai Volkov. So at the time, I was a collector, which I still technically am, of, believe it or not, I'm going to date myself now, with the VHS tapes. So I thought, well, gee, maybe this is a good opportunity. Nikolai Volkov's going to be there. Maybe he can have some material I don't have. So I was able to stop by, and I'd never met him before, never had any kind of dealings with anyone in the business. So he walks through the door. Obviously, you know Nikolai, and he said, hello, Sergeant. And I say, hey, Nikolai, how you doing? So he put his bag down and a change came to the table. You know how people set up before the show, sell the gimmicks. And so I went over, we start talking. And he said, no, I don't have nothing, but I would love to have it. I pay you. I said, you ain't going to pay me nothing, man. You got to be kidding. After all the years, what you guys did, what you did for me as a kid and all of us, no, it'd be my honor to do it. So from there, we became friends. So naturally, if I have an in like that, you know what the next move is. You want to get into the business. So Nikolai said, oh, no, no, you have a good job. Everybody gets hurt. You go be the manager. I said, oh, man, I don't want to do that bullshit, but okay, it's something. I'll do it. And, you know, we plotted. We sat down, figured out how we were going to do it, what we were going to do, and then I'm in, you know. And managing, it's a skill. But as the years went on, we would do all these shows. I say, Nikolai, I'm bigger than most of these guys. I was 230. And he said, yeah, yeah, we become tag team. So then we did that. I'm not going to say we set the world on fire, or I did 90% of managing, 10% wrestling. But, hey, I got in there. And that's why I say I was lucky. But if I wasn't good, he would have been the first one to say, you have to go sit down. You're going to do this. You're the shits. You know, and he would tell you that. But it's like, no, no, you know, great, great. Just do what you do, you know. So, and then we would always discuss things and work out. But, you know, when you worked, because Nikolai was who he was, and you're in the main event usually with greats like Bundy and Snuka, Tito Santana, Sergeant Slaughter, and then even other legends like Dominic DiNucci, a couple of times Bruno was referee in a match. It's like, how can you not just sit back and absorb knowledge? And it rubs off on you. You're not going to say par or equal or anything like that. I'm not retarded, but, you know, definitely you're learning. You work with those kind of guys, man, you learn a great deal.
You are the second person that I've had on my podcast that shared a very similar story about Nikolai. A few years ago in Columbus, Ohio, we had a wrestling convention, and the gentleman that was putting it on had contacted Nikolai, and he spoke so highly of him, and it was the very similar story to yours. You know, very, very friendly, became quick friends with him, and I really, really, really am just taken aback by that, because, you know, you hear, you know, stories of the superstars and how they are, and it's really, I don't know, it's just a testament to what kind of man Nikolai Volkov was.
Well, you know, I hear it from so many people that knew him for so long over the years in the business. But my personal experience, and not just from a wrestling perspective, but just like, okay, with my wife, they were like great friends as well. She would go with a lot of the trips that were local and drive, and, you know, so that, you know, she would keep us company and bring different things along to make the trip, you know, a little more tolerable. And then outside of that, they both love to cook, so they would share, you know, recipes. They would share just the love of life. And the thing that I remember, and I just told this story to somebody today, he became an inspector for Baltimore County, the division of, it said housing inspection, but it's not like you'd think, like when you're going to buy a house, a guy comes in and checks the wiring and all that. Even though he was an electrician, believe it or not, Nikolai Volkoff was an electrician by trade, what he learned in the old country. But his job was to go out when people bitch and say, well, your neighbor didn't cut the grass, and too much trash, whatever. So he would go out and do the inspection. So one day he sees this the house is with this old lady, like 85. So I guess we could still say that, right? That's not offending anybody. Say old.
I think old is still okay, I think.
Okay. Oh, I'm old, so I mean, you know, what the hell. So anyway, he says, you know, yeah, weeds up to my chest. So he says, I could not give her a bullshit $500 ticket. I go and I cut the grass after work. And he did it. He went, he cut her grass because she was all by herself. And it's like, that's who he is. I saw him give away pictures, dolls. You know, he actually married my son. He became a minister like the last, I'd say, year of his life. And I believe my son may be the only one who he performed the ceremony for because of his untimely death. But that week, you know, we hadn't seen each other for a while because of my move to the West Coast. And we just had a wonderful time. And one of my old partners who I was staying with, he fell in love with him. He was crying tears when he found out that he died. And it's like, gee, you only knew him for a week. And it's like, yeah, but he impacted him that much. So when he did the ceremony, my daughter-in-law, her family wasn't too clued in who that was, you know, because you wouldn't expect Nikolai Volkoff to be up there. But then when they found out, that was it. Whoosh. Here they come, you know, at the ceremony, at the reception, lining up tickets or autographs, pictures, you know, and it's like, that is the other thing that touched my other friend. He was like, wow. He signed everything. He took pictures. He wasn't upset. I said, no, never, never seen him upset for that, because for the Hall of Fame ceremony when he was inducted in 2005 at the hotel we were all staying at, so with his wife, my wife, again, getting on the elevator. Here they come. Somebody spots him. A mob. I'd say 50. And he's signing every piece of paper until finally – of people at the hotel. So, okay, that's it. You got to leave this man alone. And they ushered people away, but he didn't motion for somebody to come and stop it or say, you know, I got to go to the bed or nope. He'd stay there and sign them all night long. That's how he was.
Fantastic stories.
Yeah. I've never heard anybody in the business badmouth him neither. And it's a business where people are quick on the draw to do just that. But mm-hmm. I never heard anybody say anything bad. But they would always say to me, take care of Nikolai. Like when I first started to get around people, and you know, it was like Hoffa say to me, yeah, take care of Nikolai. Killer Kowalski, yeah, take care of Nikolai, kid. And I'm like, take care of Nikolai? I just walked in the door with all this stuff. What am I going to take care of? Then I come find out later, you know. He's a lost soul out there, but because he's so kind-hearted, you know. And at the end, like the last, I'd say 5 years or so, people thought they would take advantage of him and book him on a cheap show, give him little payday here and there. But you know what? He wasn't dumb. He just wanted to get out there. He wanted to get away from home, and he wanted to stay active. But he always felt if I stop, you know, it'd be like lard. It'd just get hard, and that'll be the end. Look, he went to an autograph show, I believe in Louisiana, the last weekend before he died. So here's a guy that he was in the business. He came from Croatia. He defected when they went to a weightlifting meet with in Canada. And he went left instead of getting back on the bus to go right, and just got lost in the crowd. And then Stu Hart's people took him in, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. You know, as a unfortunate side note, he did not make the convention here in Columbus because he passed away, I think, 2 weeks before the event. Weeks. Yeah, wow. Yeah, that was also what was so sad about it, was that unfortunately he didn't get an opportunity to partake in that. And he really, from what the promoter of the event said, he really was, he had talked to him maybe like 6 weeks prior to that, and he was not feeling good, but he was still going to make it. And the promoter was like, I don't think you need to worry about it, man. But he was damn determined to make it to Columbus.
Yeah, he liked to come to Ohio because I went to him many times there. And in fact, I posted this about a week or so ago because it was October 22nd, I believe, or 22nd. It was a big show in Indianapolis, which I know is a little bit different, but close proximity. Mm-hmm. And it was the poor guy that tried to run a show that night. He had such a high budget. But it was the first night of the World Series, and it rained. My God, it felt like you should start build the ark, you know. And it's like, of course, it was a disaster. You know how these things work out. But yeah, mm-hmm. Nikolai always loved Ohio, especially Steubenville. He was a big fan of Steubenville. We'd take a day and a half to drive there, it seemed like, from Maryland. But you know, we would get there, and sometimes Bruno would stop by and Dominic DiNucci and see old friends. So that always made him laugh and smile. And I think, you know, we all become to the business as fans first. We were all fans, I'd say 99% at least. But he was a big fan of Bruno's. And I really think Bruno's death, which I believe was August or April 18th of that year, I think that took a lot of starch out of Nikolai. And then it wasn't too long after that, July 29th, and he's gone. So, you know, that was his idol. And I think that's why they always had a great match together. Of course, you had the strongman gimmick to go with. So you put those two in there. In fact, in 1979, they repackaged Nikolai because Bruno was semi-retired. He was doing TV with Vince and bits here and there. And they said, well, you know, you want to have a good run, who you want to have? And he said, Nikolai. And it's like, shit, Nikolai's been here since 1976. His main event status is gone, and he hung around picking up a lot of fill-ins and preliminary shows. But then they repackaged him. They gave him a big push starting like around May. He was murdering everybody in his path, built him up real big. Once again, Freddie was his manager, and then he looked strong. So they had their match at the Garden on August 27th that year. And, you know, it was only a one and done, unfortunately. It didn't go on, which hopefully like to see a return match or something like that. But they did the one and done because Patterson and Backlund were hot at the time. So it was like, okay, we're just going to do this and going to move on from there. So they did it, and we loved it. And it's just another part of the legacy because he started – Nikolai did against Bruno all the way back to 1970 when he was a Mongol, part of the Mongol team. Mm-hmm. And then they ended the 70s. And in fact, the very last match of the 70s was on December 29th of 1979. And it was Nikolai against Bruno. And it's like, wow, isn't that so appropriate? It wasn't the first match of 1970 now. I don't want to sound too foolish here, but it was the last match of 1979 that closed out, which in my opinion was a historic era, the 70s. That was Nikolai was actually in Florida at that time, but he came up because, you know, he lived in Maryland, so that he went up to New Haven, I believe, and that's where they did the match, and boom, off they took care of everything. They keep everybody happy like normal.
So I have to ask, because you know, you've thrown out a few dates here and matches and whatnot, and this is the thing that I have to give credit to you. Nikita, on your Facebook page, you have an amazing collection of pictures, programs. Where did you get these? Are these from your own personal collection?
Oh, yeah. And the pictures, now, don't make a mistake, I did not take them. I bought them over the years. Okay. I bought them from various people. So none of them are in the book, because sometimes I've heard people say, well, you know, just to put the book over. It's like, no, not one of those pictures are in the book, because Scott Teal, who was the publisher and the co He did the editing. I'm going to say co-author because he put it all together. I gave him that pot of spaghetti and he separated it. And he didn't want to make a picture book. What he did do, though, which is great, was he put the clippings in there, which I really thought were fantastic and loved. But those pictures I put up every day, I started doing that, I'd say about maybe 3 years ago. I was doing it for another page that I was associated with, and then I had a falling out, and I said, okay, you know what, but I'm just going to put these up on my site. After I did it the first year, I kind of felt like, well, because you know how Facebook tells you, well, here's your memories, here's what you did a year ago, and it's like,
right.
Oh, you know, I don't want to get redundant and have people, you know, aggravate it. But then I got personal messages from people saying, you know what, I'm so sick of reading about the politics and all the other bullshit. I look forward to this every day. So I thought, well, damn, I got to do it. I got to just keep, I mean, it's not hard. Sometimes it's a little time consuming, but now that I kind of got like a system in place. So it's just sharing what I would say saved my life. I've said it many times, and I stand by that as a kid because I had a bad childhood. Father was a son of a bitch, and I turned to wrestling, and they were always there for me. And when I talk to people of like minds that love it, and that's why the book was titled When It Was Real, because that's how we looked at it. We knew, yeah, we were told this, we were told that, everybody came up with, you know, had to be like, tell you everything, like they do with Santa Claus when you get to be a certain age. It's like, just leave people the hell alone and let them enjoy things, you know? It's like, we could believe it. We could suspend belief. And we're able to just watch. And when you did something, one of our favorites, or like a title, tag team title change was huge in those days. I mean, man, it was like, holy shit, you know, you got to be kidding. Those are lousy Valiant Brothers. Man, look what they did. And you would not just watch it. You absorbed it. You talked about it until the next show. Because we, of course, in those days, you had monthly shows. So it was like Christmas every month. You couldn't wait for the next show to take place. Television was 1 hour, but that was an event. Because you wanted to see, you know, they would talk the promos in the middle of the show for your upcoming area, wherever you might be. Mm-hmm. And it was like, man, you know, you don't want to miss anything. Because then you feel like, it's not just you don't want to be out of the loop, but you didn't want to miss it because it's important to you. You feel, you don't just watch it, but you experience it. It was the time of our lives. Although I do say this, John, I'll tell you, the whole 70s, I thought were the greatest sports era. I say we were like rogue, but yet refined. Things were changing, even baseball, the Oakland dynasty, Baltimore Orioles, Yankees, and the Cincinnati Reds, and then with football, I mean, the Dolphins and boxing. Who the hell is boxing today? I mean, when Ali and Frazier would get in the ring, the world stopped. Today, I don't know who the hell the heavyweight champion is. I don't know anything about boxing. Hockey was, even roller derby. It wasn't crazy pop, but it, you know what? People were there for it, man. So it's like, geez, that was a great time. I never cared for basketball. I had a great body for it because I was tall and thin for a long time there, and friends tried to get me involved, but then it would be like, we can't do that. That's traveling. Well, you can't do this. I said, take this damn game. It's too many bullshit rules. Leave me the hell alone. I don't care. That and golf. Go take that and go sit down. Leave me alone with it.
So, okay, two follow-up questions to your picks and programs that you post on your Facebook page. I noticed that they all are WWWF. Is it safe to say that that was your favorite company?
That was the only one because the proximity, I was in Baltimore. So, you know, we didn't have cable at that time. We didn't start to get cable actually in that Maryland area till around the early 80s. So, you know, like New York was fortunate. They could pick up some LA. They could pick up some Florida, but not in Baltimore. I don't think we were lucky to get would be a Washington station if you had good reception, you use the rabbit ears and put the tin fool, as they called it, on there, and you could see a nice snowy picture, but you would get reception, because what they used to do, there was championship wrestling for 1 hour, the A show, and then All-Star Wrestling, the B show. Well, they didn't show in both markets, so Washington had the B version, the All-Star Wrestling, so you could pick that up if you were lucky again, but yeah, so WWWF, which was, it was always said by Gorilla Monsoon, the Mecca, and he's right. New York, everything is based in New York. Eastern Standard Time, when they do a production, it's based on New York time, not L.A. And it's that runs the world. The old Sinatra song, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. That's right. That's the key. That is the big litmus test. Check out New York. Yeah, I love... And I don't knock the other areas. You know, people will say, like, Ric Flair, he'd meet Bruno. It's like, Bruno would break him in half, okay? I don't never seen one Ric Flair match in my life, but knowing what I know, Bruno would break him in half. He was a gorilla. And Bob Backlund as well. Just an absolute phenomenal athlete. Say what you want, and it really irritates me when I hear people say, well, they had to pad the card for Backlund. You know what? John, they padded the card every damn month in the Garden, no matter who the champion was, because that was their Black Friday every month. If they didn't make a profit, the whole company was going to fold. And if you go back and look at the dates that line up with the championship wrestling shows, it's to promote the upcoming show at the Garden. That's great if Phil Zacco can pick it up and run with it in Baltimore and Philadelphia. Beautiful. You can run some angles off of this, but New York was the centerpiece. Madison Square Garden was the showplace. That's it. You got to make that go. And through the years, the promoters, like Baltimore, had its own little program running a few times. Like people didn't realize Bobo Brazil was running Baltimore, not as champion. He was carrying it, I should say, through the summer of 73. Pedro apparently just wasn't drawing. Bobo was over the top in Baltimore. Bruno was out of the picture at that point. He was in Indianapolis and other places. But if you go back and look at the records, Bobo was the main event from, like, I'd say June all the way through up till September. And then it was like things changed. And come that December the 1st, to me, I think it was rushed because Bruno still had a lot of commitments throughout the first month of January. When he won the belt on December the 10th, he still had to finish up with Indianapolis. He was actually tag champion with Dick the Bruiser, and it's like, shit, this had to be hey man, we're desperate. You know, ticket sales are down. We got to do this, and we got to do it now. Boom, there they went. But yet, WWWF, that was it for me, man. I loved it, and that's my standard.
You know, and I'm this is my second question to the Facebook page. I just noticed that maybe over the last few weeks you were posting a lot of programs that featured the rivalry between Bob Backlund defending the title against Playboy Buddy Rose. And the reason I mention that is because I have been following online, Instagram, Classic Portland Wrestling is a page where they've been posting a lot of videos and whatnot. And I guess that for me, I never really realized what a hell of an athlete Buddy Rose was.
Yeah. Now, what you see is when he worked for Don Owens out this way, where I'm living now in the Pacific Northwest, he was, even at that time, because some people said he was fat. And it's like, well, okay, he was not what you'd call slim, but he had stamina and he had versatility. Because when you see Morales throw him in a match they had, because they had a three-match series in the Garden, when he throws him into the corner and Buddy Rose goes upside down into the corner, backflips over, it's like, all right, who in the hell can step in there and do that? That's not easy. You better know what you do, or you're going to break your damn neck. So, yeah, he was an absolute great athlete, without a doubt. Now, the reason you saw those postings at the time that it had, I try to post for that day in history. So yeah, it was right around that time when they started the series in Madison Square Garden. They started August 30th, then the Spectrum October 16th, and so on and so forth. So yeah, Buddy Rose, when I talk wrestling with people out here, and this brings up another point. Anytime, and I've been involved in so many different venues in my life, police work, wrestling, acting. If I talk to a doctor or a lawyer, when you say that word wrestling, people's eyes light up and their stories pour forth from their childhood and the memories. Oh, with my dad, with my grandfather. And when I bought a couch recently, the guy that sold it to us, he was talking about just that, because out this way they had Jimmy Snuka, Buddy Rose, and Moondog Maine, people like, and Stan Stasiak, who, yeah, we had Stasiak on the East Coast as a heel, but out here he was a big baby face, and he was Pacific Northwest champion for a long time, I believe, and Stasiak was big news out here, and he did live out in Portland, you know, he was never from Buzzard Creek. That is a legitimate place. Every time they give you a town, it's not made up. It may not be like they Moondog Maine from Crabtree, Oregon. It's like, it's funny. You got to love it. But it does exist, but you're not going to be able to live in Buzzard Creek, Oregon, because it's just a body of water down there. And still, I call it true fiction. And you got to have that to make it, to sell it. Man, did they ever sell it back in those days.
Oh, yeah. You know, and just real quick, just to wrap up before I ask my next question. Yeah, I feel like the Pacific Northwest is a wrestling territory that doesn't get its proper due. Because if you think of all the people that came through there, Piper, Henning, Rose,
Piper,
Art Barr, as you said, Stan Stasiak.
Wiskowski, Matt Bourne. Wiskowski was out there.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. You know, Matt Bourne, all of these fantastic wrestlers and fantastic workers came from that area that not a lot of people know about.
There used to be a newsletter published, Ring Around the Northwest, and I never got it, but it used to catch my eye. I would see it within the advertisements of all the other publications. And it's like, you know, hey, the territories were hot. Everybody ran their territory. So that was your go-to place for your wrestling, and you did it. Boom. Like San Francisco, the Cow Palace, that was almost equal to Madison Square Garden. Big matches out there. You know, Pat Patterson ruled with Ray Stevens out there. Tony Garea was out there a lot with Fuji until, you know, then they would be on the East Coast. Haystack Scallon mid the circuit. He was all over the damn place. He was just a commodity. You know, you wanted Calhoun because, and look at this guy, 600 friggin' pounds, walked to the ring under his own power. He wasn't going to do cartwheels, but he'd go in there, give you 10 or minutes or so, do his thing, put the horseshoe back around his neck and walk off. And it's like, that's impressive. Who the hell can do that at 600 pounds?
Yeah. And you know what? I can't believe that I kind of overlooked this question, but you know, obviously you're a fan, as we all are when we get in this business. Who were some of the favorites that you had when you sat down on any given day to watch wrestling on the TV or watch it live? Who were your favorites?
Chief J. Strongbow, without a doubt, my all-time favorite, because he was crazy. He was just wild. He was colorful. He was exciting. And thank God I was lucky enough to become close friends with him about the last 10 years of his life through Nikolai. He and I clicked, because Chief, he's his own sort. He didn't like a lot of nonsense. Even Nikolai said, man, you friends with Chief, that's tough to do, because Chief don't like too many people. It's like, well, I'm lucky then. He likes me. But he was great to watch. And it's so funny because Cornette, Jim Cornette, he, you know, Jim Cornette's outspoken guy, respectful. But even he said one time, and no disrespect, he said to Strongbow, he said, but I don't get it. You had to have lived in that era. He said, I watched matches of him, and all he does is throws out his chest and racks his head and he starts dancing and the building comes apart. He said, you got guys out there today, they're beating their brains out, and then people are going, ho-hum. He said, that's a master craftsman. That's what the hell you're supposed to do. He did it to perfection. That's like, amen. He said it right. He got out there, and he didn't have to do a lot. And in those days, they really protected each other so much because they were working every friggin' night. Wasn't always Madison Square Garden, but the little high schools and the little gymnasiums here and there, but they worked every damn night. And so you can't go out there and kill each other. It ain't going to work. Yeah, you put it all out for the garden. That was it. or the Spectrum, places like that, you're going to let it fly. But you had to take care of each other so you can get up and go to work the next damn day. Plus, you had probably a 3, 4, maybe even 6 hour drive to get to the next damn town. Mm-hmm. Strongbow was one of my definite favorites. Bruno, of course. How could you not love Bruno? We all love Bruno. Tony Garea, you know, he gets overlooked a lot, but he was so popular, even as his first year when he hit the Federation and became Rookie of the Year. In 73, he was a popular guy, and he would be, always popular with the women, of course. But for us, the guys, you know, he'd go out there and he'd give you a great match. Pedro Morales, in my opinion, this guy could sell like nobody else. If you ever want to teach a kid, if they still do the sell anymore, say go out there and sell the moves of your opponent. Go watch Pedro Morales against Don Morocco. Here's a guy that will show you how to do it. He almost looks like he's dead at a couple of points, but believable and enough that he, when he comes back, it doesn't look stupid. It looks great. So Pedro was Bobo Brazil. We love Bobo in Baltimore. Bobo, he would just, he was himself. You know, he'd come out, do his thing, and get in trouble, give the cocoa butt, boom, he wins the match, and everybody goes home happy. But I'll tell you what, when I went to go to see a show, John, I didn't just go see the big names. I went to see Joe Turco, the Continental Nobleman, who was at that point in his career. He was preliminary. Johnny Rods, the unpredictable one.
Oh, yeah.
I talked to somebody today, and they said, you know, Johnny Rods doesn't get his due as much as he's given to the business. And for the people in the business, that the careers who he has elevated and just got off the ground. I mean, this guy, he's like just an absolute superstar. I'm glad he is in the Hall of Fame. Even though most people denounce the WWE version, they'll get a physical building, a brick and mortar building at one point. Plans are there. It will happen. You know, until that does, people look at it with cocked eyes and it's like, it's not really a Hall of Fame, is it? And it's like, well, it is. You know, it is what it is. The problem is when you start putting football players and bullshit like that in there, it takes away the sting, I know. And the one up in Schenectady was really great for a while. The Tony Villano had got started off the ground. That was, fantastic situation and building.
I haven't thought about that in forever. Is it still open?
No. They ended up, Wichita Falls, Texas took it over. They moved down there. Tony's not associated with it anymore. There is a group down there, Wichita Falls, Texas. They have big events every year, just like Cauliflower Alley. That is the next biggest event, I would say, of pure wrestling. And, you know, no cartoon bullshit, just, you know, wrestling. That would be it.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Nikita for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, back issues, and one world-class pull system. So if you're afraid that you might miss a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for the pull system, and every time it hits the racks, they'll save a copy for you. So check out the store over at wgcomics.com. You can even find them on Facebook. Just search for @WG Comics. Or if you're in the Central Ohio area, stop on over at the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, on the PVD cast. Well, you talked a little bit about it. You have penned a book called When It Was Real. So could you give the listeners maybe just a brief little summary of what they will find if they pick up the book?
Sure. It's not about me. It's about us, the fans, because I had that in my mind for years. And with me, I'm a nut. I know these things in the back of my mind, and it lives within me. And then when I would meet up with people that I hadn't seen for a while, what do we talk about? When we would go to wrestling. And remember this night we saw the Chief against Tanaka? Oh, yeah. And we saw this and we saw that, and it's like, geez, these things live on, and they're in our hearts. So the way I wrote the book, I tell it as if you're watching it again. It's not a history book per se, where you can pick it up and go to this date or that date. It is written historically in narrative form year by year, but it's I think it was best described, I hope I'm getting this right, by Greg Oliver of Slam Wrestling, when he said it's a love song to the WWWF. And he said, you know, just put everything out there, how we viewed it and why we loved it. The description, and I don't tell anything. There's no tell-all in this book. I describe some of the angles, that the way they were explained to me and how they came about, like the Chief's broken leg, for instance, with Greg Valentine. When it took place, which was Valentine's Day in 1979, coincidentally, at the old Hamburg Fieldhouse, we were about 3 or 4 days away from a blizzard. Yeah, that's right, because it was February 19th when the blizzard, the President's Day storm of 79 hit. So it was frigid outside. Of course, Pennsylvania, it's always cold there in the winter, February. The Chief said, look, here's what I want to do. He was telling Phil Zacco, the promoter, I want to bring the AMBO into the building to cart me off. And Phil Zacco said, you're friggin' crazy. I'm not opening these doors, because they had a big overhead door, rolling type door. The building actually belonged to a volunteer fire department, which they were out on a call when the whole angle took place. But Chief said, well, if you ain't going to do it, then I ain't going to do it at all. We're going to do it right. So Zacco relented. They did it. Then they're waiting, and they're waiting. Like three matches are taking place. And by the time the AMBO finally shows up, they weren't smartened up to it. I'm sure of that. They felt like this guy's got a legit broken leg. Because when you watch it, it's a hell of a production. I mean, everybody should get a damn statue from the Arts and Entertainment Academy if they were in on it. Because, I mean, it looked as legit as it gets. It was beautiful. So the only problem was when they put the Chief in an AMBO to take him off, the fans start leaving the building to follow the AMBO. And it's like, oh, shit, now what? We're heading to Reading Hospital. That's what? Because you loved it, you know? And it's things like that that you put in there, the excitement that you felt just waiting. Because in Baltimore, we had our show Saturdays afternoon, 4 to 5. Man, as soon as that last beat of the closing theme went off, out the door you shot. I wasn't driving in those days, so I'd catch the bus and on the way to the Civic Center. And you met this whole community, or world, as I like to. It was a whole world of like-minded people. Now, you had some that were really gone. When I say gone, it would be like they were so far over, they believed what they'd seen on television just took place. And it's like, no, that was taped. They're taped the shows in 3-week intervals. No. It was just on television. It's like, geez, okay, whatever. Don't argue with them. They might snap. It's things like that in this book that when it was real to us, it was real. And we loved it, and we lived it that way. And I just pour my heart out that and give each storyline that, and I don't think we missed any angles of the 70s. I really don't. It really picks up a complete deeper coverage from 1977 through 79, because as I got older and I got more deeply involved into it, then my horizons expanded, and that's why that contains even more information. See, for me, I'm going to say the greatest year was 1977 when Superstar was champion. He was a great champion. He was charismatic. But all of the faces were getting their title matches that they never would get up under Bruno or Pedro. So you had that going on. Then you got Bruno chasing the guy that stole the belt from him, which I think that carried more heat than just the Bruno defending it. With all of that going on and just great feuds, like Chief and Batera, after he broke White Wolf's neck and then White Wolf's out of commission, Chief's got to give up the tag team belts, and oh, so much going on. Tanaka and Fuji are back. George Steele's running around tearing up the place. It was just a great year. I loved it so much that it really, 77 is deep in that book. Again, my defense of Bob Backlund in 1978. I mean, when you looked at him on television, you didn't get it. But when you saw the guy in person, were up close as we could get us. And in those days, you got up to the ring. There were no guardrails. You could get right up to the ring. Sometimes they would step over us to get in the ring. It was tough for the heels a lot of times, because there are some riots that I make reference to in the book where some people had to fight their way to the dressing room. But when you looked at Bob Backlund up close, you could see, wow, there's some definition in this guy. He is the strong, what you see him doing on television. When you lift somebody up for that atomic knee drop up over your head, up on your shoulders, and then crash down, that takes a lot of strength. And he had it. So 78 is very well covered. 79, without a doubt. That's when I entered the police academy in 1979, and my life started to change, obviously. I was able to continue with my following of the sport, for sure. But then, it interfered with different dates. When you try to get to the Civic Center, you got to work that night. I mean, you had to miss some good shows. But, people would catch you off. And Madison Square Garden, luckily, was broadcast on that MSG network. And then when I made contact with people and we started a tape trading, you didn't miss anything at that point. It was like, yeah, man, I'm going to see stuff from all over now. That made it even better.
So you have a heck of a partner that worked on the book with you, Scott Teal, who has authored, so many books on Ole Anderson, James J. Dillon, The Assassin, Ivan Koloff. I mean, he's done a ton of books. So how was it working with Scott?
It was wonderful. It took me a while. It took me three tries to get Scott on board, because he's always busy. I told his wife, I think he's a vampire. I said, he doesn't sleep. There's no way. Because when we did the Cauliflower Alley, and he was at that time, he had a high position with them. I mean, he was doing so much to put it together, to make it before the thing actually, not tournament, but the convention actually began. I mean, this guy's always working. He's always doing something like wrestling-wise. Like, they have a big thing every summer where he puts up he has a ring in his backyard, and they have some of the old timers from down south, and they entertain people at their home. He's a giving man. That's the key. So couldn't really hook up with him the first time. The second time, he's like, well, you know what, Nikita, we don't really need another This Day in History book. And I'm like, but Scott, it's not that. He's like, well, I'll tell you what, I've got these like five projects in the works. Try me in about another month or so, and I'll take a deeper look. So that third time, I sent him a sample, and he was like, we got to do it. This is different. You're right. This is something that we absolutely have to do. But he said to me, if you think you're going to make $1 million, I'm not your man. Do this for the passion of the of the business and preserve its history. I said, yeah, I'm in, Scott. I'm giving back because, as I said, they really saved me as a child. And then when I stepped into their world, instead of people saying, well, go learn on your own, kid, that's, your own problems, they took care of me. Everybody took me under their wing. So it's like, yeah, I'll be happy to do this. And Scott actually edited the book because he said, the way you talk like a cop, Nikita. Nobody's going to be able to read this. You give it to me and I'll put it together. And that's what we would do, because it took a year. No, 2 years. I take that back. 2 years to edit, to get it done right, because I gave him at least, I'd say over 600 pages easily. And we never clashed, John, not one time.
Okay.
We never clashed. He would ask me this. And I learned a couple of things. I actually, because now see with Scott, he said, I was a Southern boy. I followed all the Southern stuff. He said, I'm actually learning through this. So within the 269 pages that it is consisting of, what I learned was, I thought Ken Patera was legitimately hurt when he blew his May 6th date in 1978 in Baltimore against Backlund. And I'm like, wow, but Scott's like, no, he didn't. He was mad because he actually wanted the belt. And then he blew off a lot of his WWF commitments, except for the Garden. He did show up there May 22nd for that payday. And, he just basically took and left. I said, well, geez, God, I didn't know that. And he's like, yeah, because then he provided information about Patera and where he was at, because I only followed the East Coast. So it was like, well, see that? I actually learned myself. So that was pretty. My mother, God rest her soul, she said, you know, we learn something new every day. And it's like, yeah, we do. And yeah. I certainly did too. So we never clashed, Scott and I. He would suggest things. And I say, Scott, you know what? Here it is. You do with it what you feel you need to do. He would put it together, send it to me. I said, looks great. Okay, that's saved. Move on to the next one. And then 2 years later, we had it finished. Jason Presley actually wordsmithed it to make sure that everything was done accurately in that regard, the typos and things like that. But Scott, he was the magician. I say that to this day. And he believed in me to put it out there because I had pursued other people. That's why I tell when people say, how long did it take you to do this? I said, 10 years. It took me 2 years to put it together, and then it took me 6 years to find somebody and 2 years to get it edited. So that's why it's a 10-year project. And God bless you, if you ever want to go do a book, if you're that mad at yourself, good luck.
Well, where can folks find the book?
At crowbarpress.com through Scott Teal. Scott handles all of that. Crowbar with a C. crowbarpress.com, and the Kindle version's on Amazon, but you know, and I'm not saying that because you pay more for the paperback, because nobody's getting rich out of this, but the paperback does have the clippings, and he surprised me with the clippings, because I got the advertisement cards before I got the book. And it says, you know, paperback, 286 pages, and there's 227 black and white images. And I'm thinking, what the shit? I only gave Scott like 30 pictures. Oh, no, I don't have to worry about getting sued because we're using somebody's pictures. But then when I got the book, it was like, oh, it's the clippings. That's beautiful. Because I had told the wife, my beautiful wife, Victoria, I said, you know, one day I'd like to do a clipping book. Well, Scott did it. That's basically what this is. It's not all inclusive, but there's a ton of clippings in here. So it's like, that's great. And George Napolitano, he did the cover shot. We got George's blessing to use it. Scott hooked up with him. And it's Bob Backlund against Greg Valentine from that President's Day storm, this February 19th, 1979, the one-hour draw.
Well, got just a couple of last minute questions here a couple of last questions for you, Nikita.
Yes.
I don't suppose that you watch any of the current product, do you?
No. The last time I watched anything, it was Vince and Stone Cold, which was cartoons. And that, you know, within a wrestling ring, it was fun to watch what they were going to do from week to week. But I go to some indie shows here and there. I still want to be involved in it. I, you know, once in a while when somebody's smart enough to hire me, I go and do it. But as far as any of the mainstream, no, I do not watch.
Nikita, it's been awesome chatting with you. Do you have any social media, any website, any upcoming projects that you want to talk about real quick here before we wrap things up?
All the projects are everything's all a mess right now with COVID, so I don't know, but go to Facebook. I know people say do this, do that. No, I just do Facebook, and every day, like John said, I post something. If you send me a friend request and you got mutual friends or you're wrestling related, because you know there's a lot of goofballs out there that you want to steal identities and stuff. So if you have people that are mutual friends, boom, I take everybody. I, you know, we're all in this mess together on this earth, so glad to have you. Come aboard.
Well, I'm just going to say it right here, right now. I'm going to have you back on because there's a Please. Ton of other questions I have. So we're definitely going to have to, maybe when the calendar changes to 2021, we're going to have to reconvene and talk some more, Nikita, because this has been awesome.
Please, that would be wonderful.
With that then, thank you again, Nikita, for coming on. I really do appreciate it.
All right. That's Vidanya Tavares.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Nikita Breznikov. And man, did I have a blast talking to him. And I cannot wait to have him back on to talk even more about old school wrestling. But in the meantime, let me tell you where you can express your opinion on whether you like this episode or you didn't like this episode, or if you like or dislike any episode of the PVD Cast. Well, you can shoot me an email. My email address is johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. And you can even leave me messages over on the Facebook page and the Instagram feed of this podcast. Simply look for @PVDcast. And just in case you want to tell somebody about this great podcast and tell them where they can find it, it's available at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting platforms like Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, iHeartRadio. Basically, just search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after PVDcast John Orlando in any podcasting platform search bar, and you're sure to find it. And don't forget that every Monday night at 8 p.m. through the Facebook page of the PVDcast, I do a live broadcast. It's so much fun. You should definitely check it out. Just again, go over to the Facebook page @PVDcast Monday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern time, and check out the live broadcast. It's great. You definitely take my word on it. You need to check it out. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I think it's time for me to get on out of here. So I will chat at each and every one of you later. And as always, stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.